Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet James Allen Hall. James Allen Hall is the author of Now You're the Enemy, which won the 2009 Lambda Literary Award and the Helen C. Smith Award from the Texas Institute of Letters. He teaches at SUNY Potsdam in upstate New York. Hi, James. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me, Jan.
We're really excited to have you. You're going to read from your new book, right?
Yes, absolutely. I'd like to start by reading a poem called Portrait of My Mother as the Republic of Texas. There's a little bit of a story I think I should tell you. The Republic of Texas is an actual extant organization. They still rabble-rouse in Texas. They still do not acknowledge the treaty which admitted Texas into the Union. So they're a secessionist organization, and when I was reading about them, they're wildly conservative and yet at the same time really radical. And I thought, well, this is like my mom. This is Portrait of My Mother as the Republic of Texas. After my mother won independence in 1836, she dysfunctioned as her own nation, passed laws, erected monuments to men who would never again be slaves to order and pain. Remember the Alamo? That was my mother. Then in 1845, that always pleasing church mouse voted for annexation. My mother had too many selves and the desire to enslave them all. Pregnant, she was forced to become the 28th child of the American family. Lone Star, no longer. She joined a lineage of jacked to Jesus hair, developed insatiable cravings for honey barbecue. Her uncles sauntered up, stroked the thin lace of her, declared she looked mighty good. She let them say mighty good while grinning at one another. Nothing grew then on the prairies of my mother. Then she learned dissent, demanded men recognize her sovereignty. She organized an embassy in a silver trailer shaped like a virgin bullet. My mother renamed herself the Republic of Texas, unfurled her flag all the way into the 1980s, when the Republic kidnapped her neighbors, Joe and Margaret Rowe, to highlight abuses she'd suffered. My mother was an American terrorist. Don't mess with Texas. She died in the standoff. My new mother was elected by a landslide and moved to Cuero, a city whose largesse depends on retirement pensions. My peaceful mother holds weekly rallies. What do we want? When do we want it? Her lipstick stains the bullhorn mauve. In her spare time, my mother receives foreign dignitaries and does drywall. The global conglomerate of my mother opened her first staffed consulate in Barcelona. She insists visitors speak American. Currently, the Republic is facing lean times. The former treasurer neglected May's utilities, refuses to return the funds. Pledge your support today. My motherland is standing by the rotary phone, waiting for your call. Love her or leave her. The speaker of this next poem should not be trusted. Safety. The father does not knock on the locked door gently, as if loving a small hurt thing. The father does not say please over and over until his voice becomes unraw with the not said. The mother inside the room does not hold a gun to her chest. The mother did not make the father into what stands knocking, a safety The mother clicks on and off. She has not just ended an affair with a brutal, brutal man. The mother's heart is not broken. The children are not asleep in their rooms. They will never know how close the mother comes to the trigger. They will not grow up to take the father's place. The father is the mask, the terrible delay. This is a brief history of my mother. My mother, 14, makes a girl eat an entire can of Alpo. At 40, she leaves her husband for a man who wears women's underwear. Every Friday night of my childhood, she's criminal. The door creaks open for the same cop, his broad smile. Bank of America calls for Marcia Hall. I'm not in right now, she says. My mother, 13, smokes mentholated cigarettes. The burn dissolves to a tight hiss on her thigh. She wakes to her father's kiss and cannot breathe. My mother promises the abuse will stop with me. She tries to die once by swallowing pills, choking them up as I hold back her hair. In green pants, orange sash, Miss Safety Guard, 1982. She blacks out her front teeth, smiles at men who catcall to her on the corner, her stop sign in hand. Their faces quicken from the slap of her unbeauty. Tries to die once by standing in traffic on a dirt road at 3 a.m. My mother, desperate for a Mack truck. My mother asks the doctors to turn off her dying father's respirator. She watches him struggle to breathe. My mother's tombstone will read, "Gone to see my mother."
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet James Allen Hall. He's reading from his new book entitled Now You're the Enemy. I want to ask you, James, about, first of all, I really like the dynamic of the voice, of your voice when you read.
Oh, what happens?
Well, it changes. It goes up and down. You know how some writers read and it's kind of monotone and deadly, and you're so connected.
Well, I'm glad that happens. Yeah, it's hard to be disconnected, I feel, from the work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. I want to ask you about your use of metaphor in the work, which is pretty amazing.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, just the poem you began with, "My Mother is Republic of Texas." You know, unusual choices, mm-hmm. But also, quite a range of metaphor. And you were talking about that a little before. You said something about, how you came to your philosophy of craft, and you were relating that to queer theory.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
Are you talking about a structure of multiple selves there, or what are you talking about?
I think I am. I want to allow in the poem a multiplicity of voices and a multiplicity of knowledges. So what can be known and what can't be known. I think poetry, is that war between the familiar and the rupturous, or the context and the epiphanic, we might call it. And that's also sort of the model of, what we do know, and then what we can gesture towards what we don't know, the mystery of a poem. I love mysteries in poems. I think poems that know everything, like people, are not to be abided, mm-hmm. I can't abide them. Maybe that's something in me. But I think metaphor is that gesture towards, it's the X that we know that we have to refer to in order for us to limb the why that we don't, you know, the A that we know, the B that we don't, whatever you want to say. I'm trying to be mathematical. I don't think that works. But yeah, I think metaphor believes that people can change, that walls can change, that things can become something else. And so metaphor is a fundamental optimism in human nature to be better than what it might be already. And so in that way, I'm an optimist, though I like to write about ruin and and people who are in love with self-destruction, you know, that really attracts me. But I want to write about it in a way that's not intuitive. I like that counterintuitiveness. And I think queer theory has that. I mean, Foucault, for instance, is the granddaddy of counterintuitive thinking for me. The idea that we can become something else, that we in fact inhabit our own antithesis, or that it's inhabited in us. I love that idea.
Okay. Well, it does expand everything.
Yeah.
There's more room. What about does that also extend to like a register of metaphor? Like we were talking before about the different kinds of diction, you know, like your use of the vernacular, yet the framework of your book, which uses a quote by John Donne and Louise Glick, you know, fairly formal choices, you know. So is that related to that also in your mind? That multiplicity or that, you know, things working from one end to another are the different range of registers?
I think so. I think that I like tension. I think all art needs some tension. I'm someone who will put in the kitchen sink and the refrigerator and, you know, the DVDs. I'll put anything in a poem. And there needs to be some filter, some way of focusing for the writer and for the reader, I think, in order to feel the emotion most strongly. So metaphor helps me do that. It creates a lens. It is the edge of the lens, the rough glass that lets everything else be smooth. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, great. I'm writing notes so that I can use them later for my own poetry.
that's so sweet. Thank you.
But okay. Can you read more poems?
I can. I'm always sort of distrustful of when people say, well, this poem really happened. I really dislike that. But I was once in Fort Lauderdale, and I was sort of standing near the street waiting for a meeting or something to begin. And I saw a man go into traffic and start taking all of his clothes off. And so I watched that man. He was beautiful. But it was this moment of he just had it with the world, and he decided to let the world know. And I just – that moment has always stayed with me. And I wrote a poem sort of based on that event. It's called Portrait of My Lover Singing in Traffic. Man rushing onto Sunrise Boulevard, singing disorder in the flesh. First – threadbare notes, then his trousers, stunning the air. Man singing the jackknifed torso, stabbed back songs. Man jerking between rows of cars, people locking their doors, their faces ashen when at last his shirt comes off. Wind carrying the ripped bar of fabric to the sidewalk where I catch him, fitting fingers to places his skin had been. Man rushing into traffic, losing his shoes, their holes like something singed, then his underwear, then he's naked. I ain't got nobody. Everyone watching, moving their lips, the train guards lowering the song of the mechanical flashing arm, stopping all of us. The muscle of him, unstoppable, uncontrollable song. Sirens, reddening air, a mouth opening back the counterweight song, I been rent by tougher men, which becomes, so quickly, the gravel mouth, the spread leg, the rib-kicked song, which gives way behind glass and the police cruiser to the I've been your bulletproof piece, now take me to where I'll die in shadow song. Inside my shattershot skin, I sing the broken ballads my mother taught me. My body severed in fog sway, the derailed train is my shepherd I shall not want. Her voice audible even under all that cop muscle and metal, singing the song of stained and never more beautiful than criminal. And the man is my mother, I'm filled with want. The lyrics are rushing unbidden out of me, joining the shirtless choir in the street, all hands locking, webbed behind the head, face between the legs, kicked apart, singing, don't grieve so open, in motherless tones, right on through from the beginning. This poem is called Song. Then I was shattering, not just broken, but the force behind the breaking. Exquisite, a low, unstoppable voice. The nurse pushed on my mother's stomach, her fingers curled underneath her palms. My mother's rapid heart told me, be afraid. In the sober white room, my mother said, I'm warning you. The nurse didn't stop. It was her job to separate us. My mother's fist drew back. My father caught his wife's hand too late. The nurse stumbled backward, breaking a tray of sterile instruments, her bottom lip bleeding. The doctor, crouched between my mother's legs, could not tell which woman he found more beautiful, the one falling back in fear, or the one whose fear was filling the room with sound. My mother's hand, the nurse's mouth, I was born between them, calling from the open wound, wanting to heal her, even before I could be heard. The next poem is from a longer section, or a longer poem. It's a section from a longer poem based on paintings by Edouard Manet. This is Portrait of My Mother as Victorine Muron. Muron was one of Manet's favorite models. He used her in a total of 8 paintings. This is a painting called Olympia, and it is the section title as well. The men are doomed. They cannot take off their rumpled suits, their grave hats, their impossible trousers. They go on loving her, calling it love, using that word. They keep inventing her name with razors in the fleshy part of their forearms. They go on, adding desolate to desperate. Olympia reclines, her naked body rinses the eye with an ethereal sheen. Then the maidservant appears, her palms pink in the basket she's brought from the garden, blooms from some hybrid bush. The maidservant's mouth is agape, an entrance. No one sees my mother slip her skin, draping it over the other woman. The men go on loving her absented body, fighting over it, flicking out their razors, encircling each other in the back of badly lit bars. My mother will do the same for the maid. She'll go out of the frame and fall in love with a kind man, and, knowing she can't stay, she will undo him. The women are sisters. They have lain together, watching the man fumble with the belt, the buttons, the sheepskin condom. They have been decoys. They have suffered under the stark monopoly of light.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet James Allen Hall, and he's reading from his new book, Now You're the Enemy. I want to ask you about this meeting of sadness and rage in your work. You know, there's such brave statement in your poetry, and I'm wondering, when you were writing these poems, you know, how did you manage, I don't know if that's the right word, how did you live in the deep emotions of the poetry, and how did you, it just seems like there's intensity here that would be very challenging to be with for a long period of time as a writer.
As a human being, yeah. You know, I was so glad, you know, when the book got taken and published, I felt like I could finally close the doors on this and move into another town, not even another house, another town where people were kind and good and said, how are you doing at the post office? And so writing the poems was not, you know, living it was hard, but writing the poems was empowering, I think, you know, to take experience and to make from that chaos something, you know, from the ruins that might be beautiful, to make it live somewhere else outside of you, and to exercise control over it it's an amazing thing to do, and very helpful. I don't know if therapeutic would be the word, but I wouldn't choose that word, I don't think, but maybe it was.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that. It was also the only relationship I had with my mother at the time, writing the poems. So, you know, I was angry that things had happened to my mother, and I was sad that things had happened to her, and I was angry and sad, too, that we didn't have the kind of relationship that we used to have. So I lived that as long as I needed to, I guess, and writing helped.
Mm-hmm. Well, not all of it became beautiful in the book.
Yeah.
You talk a lot about optimism and, you know, and having control over outcomes and stuff in the writing, which you certainly do, but was that, how much of that was aesthetic choice, and how much, I mean, did you need as a writer to have some of that not become beautiful?
Well, I mean, it's the theory of beauty, you know. My theory of beauty is that the you know, the shattered, the ugly, the torn, the downtrodden, the kicked, you know, that's where beauty lives for me. You know, I hate that word perfect. I don't think it exists. Or normal. That's another one of those words for me. And so, you know, finding beauty at the margins and the gutters and saying this is valuable. Here, look, listen. You know, I think it's really important for me as a writer, and I would say even as a gay writer. And I don't know if those things go together or if I'm one and the other. You know, that question is always sort of asked, and I'm fine with people calling me a gay poet. I am. I'm a poet. I'm gay.
Okay. Okay. Could you read some more poems?
I could. Yeah.
Yeah.
This was the last poem to be written for the book. Portrait of my mother as self-inflicting Philomena. The man on top of my mother waits for her to turn into a winged calling thing. Now that he's captured her, he's thrilling in her throat, flattening it with his hands. The woman under him is guilty, mutable. He gets to judge what she will become. The tongue, he knows she'll use it when his grip loosens. His grip rules her out of wren and raven and pigeon and lark, blackening out the hours of the avian July sky. The man knows how to press a woman's face into the hardwood floor, to wear away her nose skin, make the foul bones show. He knows the body can become its own enemy. The man and my mother have been lovers. They've tried on each other's skin, dressing in the other's clothes, going out renamed. They stumbled home those nights, tearing away their clothes, their taped bodies scraped raw. And that's what it takes. Memory of her skin to make him roll off of her. He can't face the animal he's become. He walks calm into the kitchen, calm, reaching for the gun. My mother runs even before she's upright, out the unlocked door, down the concrete stoop, pulling up her pants, over the lawn, into the Sunday traffic, waving her hands, saying help in a voice she does not recognize. In the street, man after man slows but does not stop. Behind her, her lover opens the door, the shotgun still in hand. Come back, Marsha Lynn, don't you make this worse. But a car of women stops. My mother is rescued. Later, it looks like Grace, his decision to let her go. It helps her believe he's sorry. It will never happen again. Days later, she's climbing on top of him in the cot, believing him when he says she is beautiful, hoping this will heal her. The man moves quietly underneath, handless, a meek thing, except when he's calling her name in a voice indistinguishable from her own.
We have time for one more.
I'd like to read a new poem called Night Watch. Please, Master, it's winter. Warm yourself on my mouth. Please, Master, I'm plagued, cast out of the city. A man loved me, then he didn't. Please, Master, don't let me be mastered by another. Master, the stung, cold trees seduce no one but me. Please, Master, make me myopic, make me ruin myself for a match. In the city's cast-off light, I'll never be beautiful. The light could mean inferno. The sound of the cars hold me fast. Please, Master, your stubble burns my tongue. My tongue will never sound the same. Please, Master, deprive me of firewood. Leave me depraved. Extinguish the need in me to please. Master, my doors are broken. The wood splintered as marriage. Master, the tree branches brittle with ice. Everywhere I turn, I see frailty. My bones are alone in my body. Master my body, I'll be your collared night, your burned out moon. I'll show you what survives, smolders in the snow, healing itself. My throat chars each word for love, dear punishing pleasure, Master, I have desired to be done for, Master. I can't mean anymore what I used to mean. Master, if you love me, you'll destroy me. Smoke-mouthed, smitten, a fireplace all smoke. But you made my mouth too, Lord, for yours, Lord. Mouth that holds you safe, kisses your sleep-eyed face. My mouth, now palled, past pleading.
It's the poetry of James Allen Hall. Thank you so much. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Crosley is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, Independent Public Radio, 91.3 WYEP.